The following is presented as an entertainment program emphasizing folklore. It is not intended as legal or medical advice in any way and should not be used to replace the advice of legal or medical professionals. Hello and welcome to the New World Witcheries Folk Magician's Notebook episode for March of 2026. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. We highly recommend that you also pick up a reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Astrological Pocket Planner, the Ritual Daily Planner, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for March 2026. March begins with a waxing moon in Leo, meaning a lot of magical energy behind spells involving glamour, creative expression, and workings that bolster one's esteem and ego. Do ridiculous things boldly, and they will be more likely to pay off in this period. On the 2nd, the sign shifts, and on March 3rd, we have a full moon in Virgo. This is a full moon all about stimulating your curiosity and desire to learn and grow. With the spring just around the corner, it's a great time to get seedlings going, take a wild crafting walk, plan your coming garden with witchy plants like angelica, gravel root, or witch hazel, and try new forms of magic and divination. There will also be a lunar eclipse visible in Western North America and parts of Asia and Oceania, making it a good time for banishing work. In many places, you'll be able to see a blood moon that turns red, and on the eastern seaboard of North America, you'll also get the chance to see a partially eclipsed moon and the sun in the sky at the same time, a phenomenon known as a selenillion. On the 4th through the 6th, the moon is in Libra waning, which could put a damper on your sense of purpose, justice, or motivation to get things done. As you move into the waning moon in Scorpio on the 7th through the 8th, you may also find you're withdrawing and becoming a bit more secretive. If you want to repurpose this time magically, use divination to help you define a clear path forward for the month. On the 9th through the 10th, the moon is in Sagittarius, followed by a waning Capricorn moon on the 11th through the 13th. Work towards long-term goals or do your magical spell maintenance regularly here to make sure that you'll have all your enchanted ducks in a row. On the 14th through the 15th, we get the moon in Aquarius, which will be a good time for taking your stored up plans and energy and refocusing them into creative work. This is a great time for talisman making, charm bag creation, or just putting it all together in a little tucket spell jar. On the 16th through the 18th, we get the moon in Pisces, including the new moon in Pisces on March 18th. This is a time for deep intuitive work, including working with dreams, divination, and intuition. It's also a great time to do work with seaside sorcery if you have that opportunity, or even to just take a magical bath as well. On the 19th through the 20th, we find the moon in Aries, and we get the spring equinox, which happens on March 20th when the moon goes void, of course. This is a good time for renewal and rebirth. While the moon will be void, of course, during the actual equinox, it will be transitioning from Aries to Taurus, and that makes it a good time for doing magical work with grounding or cleansing. It's also a great time to take stock of the local plants in your bioregion that you could build magical relationships with. The moon leaves Taurus and is waxing into Gemini on the 23rd through the 24th, then into Cancer on the 25th to the 26th. These are good times to do magical work with trusted friends, companions, or covenmates, and it can be a good time to do a skills exchange or take a magical class or two. The moon is in Leo on the 27th through the 28th, and then goes back into Virgo on the 29th and 30th, waxing this time, so that you may feel a need to be seen and heard. Big, loud, gaudy magic is welcome here, and get into the spirit of it all with fire spells, glamours, and even doing things like adding magical elements to your daily clothing. Even sewn-in charms in the lining would work well here. We end March with the moon just tipping into Libra on the 31st, waiting to wax to a full moon on April Fool's Day, so be prepared for shenanigans. In the cards. Each month, I'll pull a card from a tarot and a playing card deck and indicate the meanings of those cards in general and offer my own interpretations of how they could be read in actual practice. Our playing card of the month. Our playing card this month is the Jack of Clubs. This card is one of our face cards, and thus in a reading is often a placeholder for particular people. In this case, the person being referenced by the cards would likely be a close friend or a sibling of some kind, a presence that feels supportive and familiar, although the affection is often not fiery or passionate so much as steady and strong. In some decks, the Jack of Clubs will be holding a pike, spear, or staff, which is a tool that can be used for both defensive and helping with things like climbing or walking purposes. This gives the card a bit of an extra layer of meaning, since it may be telling the reader that the person being referred to will likely provide good advice, but may be cautious about giving it. It can also be a reminder to deepen and strengthen our close relationships, especially our friendships, and to ask for help when we need it. Tarot card of the month. The tarot card this month is the Page of Pentacles. This card usually depicts a young person in good clothes standing before a field. The field is sometimes shown as a plowed one, thus planted and ready to begin the growing season, and frequently mountains or trees are shown in the distance as well. The page holds up a single pentacle, usually golden in color, and seems to be looking at it with rapt attention. In a reading, this card is often taken to mean that there is an opportunity that will appear in the near future, or that is already presenting itself, and that the person querying the cards should be ready to seize that when it's revealed. The gold coin and the rich land can both be linked to abundance and prosperity, as well as simply an indication that money and wealth are on the horizon. The horizon also holds those mountains and trees, though, which can indicate that while the person is likely to have a run of beginner's luck as they pursue their opportunities, they will need to plan to deal with eventual obstacles and be prepared to put in some hard work to maintain their momentum. Crucially, the card also carries a slight warning about being too fixated on the material world. The transfixed gaze of the page eyeing the golden coin reminds us that making the most of an opportunity is a good choice, but that the pursuit of riches can often become an endless and obsessive one if we're not careful. Our folk divination method of the month. Palmistry, folklore style. Last month, I had a chance to teach some of my courses on folklore and magic for the Between the Worlds Sacred Space Conference. One of those was on body lore and folk magic, and within that course, one of the things I have people do is some folk palmistry. Now, palmistry itself is an established method that looks at the lines in your hand to determine specific trajectories for your life based on the way they cross, intersect, or otherwise take shape across your palm. Folk palmistry pulls a bit from traditional palmistry and then adds in some additional beliefs, too. When I do the course on body lore, I have participants look at their own hands and answer the following questions. 1. Do you have any spots on your nails, and how many? Why? Well, spots on the nails can indicate a few different things in folklore. For example, in Ozark folklore, we find the following. White spots on fingernails are supposed to represent lies, and little boys often hide their hands to avoid betraying falsehoods. However, there is a fortune-telling rhyme children use when they count these white spots. A gift, a ghost, a friend, a foe, a letter to come, a journey to go. That's from Vance Randolph's Ozark Folk Magic. They can also indicate the number of lovers a person is likely to have in their lifetime, or in some cases, the number of children they will have. 2. When you curl your palm, does it make an M or a W? Why? While many people have a W on their palm, indicating a wise mind, the M is a bit rarer and indicates strong intuition, insight, psychic, or M for magical, abilities. 3. How long is your lifeline? Does it stay solid or break near the end? Why? Well, your lifeline is the line on your palm that runs from the space between your thumb and forefinger down around the base of your thumb in a sort of curving C shape towards your wrist. The longer it is, the longer your life will be, according to folklore. However, there are also some other elements to this. If the line gets fainter or breaks up near the end, close to your wrist, it may indicate illness or sudden death. If it intersects with another line, like the heart line running across the middle of your palm, that can indicate a healthy, steady life ahead, although it could also indicate a strong romantic nature, too. 4. Count the lines you see on your palm, then use that number to find a corresponding alphabet letter. Why? This will give you the corresponding initial for your true love, or at least someone who will be romantically significant to you. 5. How many lines are on the pad under your pinky finger? This, like spots, can be used to indicate things like how many children you are likely to have. 6. Do you have any freckles on your left hand? Why? Well, again, sometimes this is used to indicate things like numbers of lovers or children, but at least one bit of mountain folklore says that looking at the number of freckles on your hand at the end of summer will tell you how many cold snaps you should expect during the winter ahead. 7. Do you notice any itching anywhere? Now, this can mean a few things, including you'll receive money soon, especially if your left hand itches, that you could get good luck, according to one rhyme, by rubbing an itchy hand on wood. The rhyme goes, rub it on wood, it will all come to good. A right hand itch can mean news or a letter coming soon. Spitting on an itching hand and putting it in your pocket can bring money. Itchy hands mean work is coming your way soon, or an itchy hand could mean that you'll shake hands with a stranger. And just for fun, some bonus hand-based lore. Rubbing an itchy hand on your pocket can bring money, similar to some of the ones we saw earlier. Shaking with your left hand will bring bad luck and can be used as a curse. Shaking hands while wearing gloves or over a gate or other barrier can also bring bad luck. Breaking something held by someone else can also cause bad luck. So lots of little cursing mechanisms there. There's lots of other lore on hands and other body parts, of course, that I can't get to here. If you're interested, I'll have slides and a class recording of a body lore class available on our Patreon page. It'll be free to our $5 a month plus patrons and purchasable by anybody who wants it as well. For now, that will do it for our folk palmistry. Hope you found that handy. O Witch's Words. The Witch's Proverb of the Month. In spring, at the end of the day, you should smell like dirt. From the story Bluebeard's Egg by Margaret Atwood. Our folktale of the month is The Dartmoor Witch Hare, a West Country tale from England shared by A.E. Bray in 1833. An old witch in the days of yore lived in this neighborhood, and whenever she wanted money, she would assume the shape of a hare and would send out her grandson to tell a certain huntsman who lived hard by that he had seen a hare sitting at such a particular spot, for which he always received a reward of sixpence. After this deception had many times been practiced, the dogs turned out, the hare pursued, often seen but never caught, a sportsman of the party began to suspect, in the language of tradition, that the devil was in the dance. And there would be no end to it. The matter was discussed, a justice consulted, and a clergyman to boot, and it was thought that however clever the devil might be, law and church combined would be more than a match for him. It was therefore agreed that, as the boy was singularly regular at the hour at which he came to announce the sight of the hare, all should be in readiness for a start the instant such information was given. And a neighbor of the witch, nothing friendly to her, promised to let the parties know directly the old woman and her grandson left the cottage and went off together, the one to be hunted and the other sent on the hunt. The news came, the hounds were unkenneled. The huntsman and sportsman set off with surprising speed. The witch, now a hare, and her little colleague in iniquity, did not expect so speedy a turnout, so that the game was pursued at a desperate rate, and the boy, forgetting himself in a moment of alarm, was heard to exclaim, "Run, Gran, run, run for your life!" At last the pursuers lost the hare, and she once more got safe to the cottage by a little hole in the door, not large enough to admit a hound in the chase. The huntsman and all the squires with their train lent a hand to break open the door, yet could not do it till the parson and the justice came up. But as law and church e'er certainly designed to break through iniquity, so they now even did succeed in bursting the magic bonds that opposed them. Up the stairs they all went, and there they found the old hag bleeding, covered with wounds, still out of breath. She denied she was a hare and railed at the whole party. "Call up my hounds," said the huntsman, "and let us see what they take her to be. Maybe we have yet another hunt." On hearing this, the old woman cried quarter. The boy dropped on his knees and begged hard for mercy, which was granted on its being received together with a good whipping. Thus the old woman escaped a worse fate for the time present. But on being afterwards put on her trial for bewitching a young woman and making her spit pins, this tale was told and given as evidence against her, before a particularly learned judge and a remarkably sagacious jury. And the old woman finished her days like a martyr at the stake. Book Review. Icy Sedgwick's Fate of Fortune. This month's book is Fate of Fortune by Icy Sedgwick. Sedgwick may be a familiar voice to listeners as the voice of the Fabulous Folklore podcast, and she's a professional folklorist from the UK who has been working in the field and writing books on folkloric topics, ranging from ghost lore to her title on love spells, Bring Me Love, and her excellent collection on subversive and transgressive folkloric women, Rebel Folklore. She writes fiction tinged with folklore and magic as well, and practices some aspects of folk magic such as divination, which makes up a piece of her latest work. In Fate of Fortune, Sedgwick takes on many different methods of divination found among folk practitioners, ranging from some of the more elaborate ones, such as horary astrology, to simple and direct ones like weather omens, such as the famed Red Sky at Night rhyme. The book itself is divided by the forms of divining she examines, starting with cartomancy, in which she does give a brief mention to my own book in the interest of transparency and reporting, and then working through things like body lore, divining by food and drink, the uses of augury and other animal divination, the aforementioned weather omens, and even death-based portents of fortune. The book's underpinning lore is always well-researched, and Sedgwick incorporates her sources naturally, pointing the reader towards a variety of antique manuals of fortune-telling and prognostication, as well as searching out archaeological evidence and even artistic representations of methods, such as Salvatore Rosa's 17th century painting showing the famed Witch of Endor using necromancy to raise the spirit of the biblical prophet Samuel. Most of the sources are European, or North American in origin, with some expansion into portions of the Middle East and Western Asia and South America. She addresses that focus early in the book and notes that some systems like the Chinese I Ching are complex enough to warrant entire books of their own, and that she would feel out of her depth trying to parse those systems herself. She also makes a similar note about some of the more elite methods of astrology, and does her best to stay focused on the more everyday methods of divining within the book. Sedgwick's scholarly focus is balanced by her inclusion of her own experiences, which helps to keep the book grounded. She's also not afraid to point out when systems have been debunked or need to be examined with a very large grain of salt, as when she notes pseudosciences like phrenology and physiognomy, both of which often contained deeply flawed and racist ideas. Readers looking for direct ethnographic accounts of these methods may feel that they don't get as much depth as they might like, but as an introduction to a vast variety of methods and a signpost to further exploration, the book is highly useful. Where else will you learn which bird would be the best one to see on Valentine's Day if you're looking for a well-heeled mate? The goldfinch is where the big money's at. If you are looking for a divinatory guide that doesn't just end at the typical handful of methods like cards and runes, but does include those along with some fascinating notes about them, but also goes into everything from using apple seeds to coffins for divination, a hollow-sounding coffin being a less than ideal predictor of household well-being, then Fate of Fortune will be a useful compendium to include on your shelf. Materia Magica. The Lucky Rabbit's Foot. This month we're looking at the folklore and magic surrounding one of the most ubiquitous pieces of conjure paraphernalia, the rabbit's foot. There are plenty of theories about this particular luck charm, but not that much that can be definitively put down regarding its origin or provenance. Rabbit foot charms have been around since at least the mid to late 19th century in North America, and likely predate the Civil War. They are used for general luck, gambling aids, love enhancers, and other areas where a bit of extra luck might help. Catherine Ironwood provides information on the rabbit's foot on her Lucky W Amulet Archive, describing the foot from catalog offerings from the early to mid-20th century. As for the foot itself, a circa 1940 mail order catalog from the Standard O&B Supply Company, a Chicago-based distributor of African-American hoodoo material, offered undye rabbit foot charms made with a metal band and link to attach on a chain. The Johnson Smith Novelty Company offered identical charms in its 1941 catalog. The advertisement shown here goes these one better and promises a free vial of Van Van oil with each rabbit's foot. The formula is a Louisiana hoodoo favorite that clears away that evil mess and increases the strength of any good luck charm on which it's applied. Since none of the older catalogs or ads mention any color when describing rabbit's foot charms, it can be assumed that the items were undyed and came only in natural tan or white. Ironwood also points out that the rabbit's foot appears in the famous Uncle Remus stories, written by Joel Chandler Harris in 1881. In a tale entitled Brother Rabbit and His Famous Foot, Uncle Remus describes the tricky Brer, or Brother Rabbit, having a prosperity mojo bag, which he refers to as a money purse, filled with shiny rings, collard green seeds, calamus root, and, oddly enough, a great big rabbit foot. So, even a rabbit carries a rabbit's foot for luck and money. How's that for strange? But why is it so lucky? An informant from Atlanta in 1893, Mary Owen, states that the talisman must indeed be the left hind foot of a graveyard rabbit, killed in the dark of the moon. So we can see that the process for making the charm has something to do with its luck associations. If a person could catch a rabbit in a graveyard in the dark, he would indeed have to be very lucky, and thus his luck might transfer to the animal's foot. This is a bit of a stretch of reason, in my opinion, but there certainly seems to be some specific tradition involved in collecting the talisman. One of the common threads to the rabbit's foot seems to be an intimacy with death or the dead. The rabbit must be caught or found in the cemetery, and this may have something to do with its luck. The dead are able to provide luck to the living in some folkloric accounts, and a magical animal like a rabbit, which becomes tied to the dead, may well be running luck back and forth from them to you. This particular luck charm can be found throughout North America, often sold in roadside stores, children's candy and prize machines, and even gas stations. It's commonly rubbed to activate the luck and fed with an oil like Fast Luck or Van Van on a regular basis. If you happen to have one of these on a keychain or in charm form, we'd love to hear your experiences with it. Have rabbit's feet ever brought you extra luck, or, as the joke is often made, is it just unlucky for the rabbit? Creature Corner. The Jackalope. This month's creature is the jackalope. Now, many people are familiar with this little antlered rabbit, often associated with North American West and Great Plains Rocky Mountains regions. One of the joys of these beasts is that you can often find evidence of them mounted on the walls of Western bars, gas stations, and restaurants in the form of taxidermy jackalope heads. These are a form of rogue taxidermy, or a sort of visual practical joke, wherein the antlers from an animal like a deer are grafted onto the mounted head of a jackrabbit. Something that's been done since at least the 1930s as a way to boggle the minds of visitors from parts east and make them think that the West is home to fearsome critters like the jackalope, the hoopsnake, and other mysterious monsters. As a phenomenon, jackalopes are not unique or new, and horned or antlered rabbits have appeared in mythologies and folklore from a wide variety of places. For example, in parts of Germany and the Alps, a creature known as the Wolpertinger has been reported for several hundred years and is said to resemble a rabbit, or sometimes a weasel, with tusks like a wild boar, the antlers of a deer, and the wings of a bird on its back. John Brunvand's American Folklore and Encyclopedia notes that there is a Mayan legend of a god called Chinax who felt badly for the rabbit after it lost its native antlers to a tricksy deer and gave them long ears to compensate. Largely, the jackalope is thought to be a lighthearted joke played on greenhorns, and tales of the jackalope often paint them as endowed with strange gifts. In some tales, they are said to be naturally shy, but when provoked, they will run at speeds of over 65 miles an hour. And in their fury, they can only be brought down by a buffalo gun. They're supposed to have loud voices, but can only make noise or sing during thunderstorms or tornadoes to cover their cries. Some legends say that they can only be seen during such storms when the lightning flashes, and that if you are fast enough to catch one, you get good luck. Their milk is said to be a panacea for a number of ailments, although milking a jackalope seems like a pretty precarious way to make a livelihood. Is there any truth in the legends, though? It's possible that while the current iterations of jackalopes and their kin are mostly the stuff of story and prank, early accounts might have been seeing jackrabbits with a form of a skin infection called Chope's papilloma, which can cause scaly or rough growths that, from a bit of a distance, might resemble horns or antlers on the animals. Today, you can still find rogue taxidermy jackalopes everywhere in the West, as well as in online shops like Etsy, where you can get a more humane and clearly more fabricated jackalope made from cloth and wood rather than an actual rabbit head and deer antlers. You can even join the National Jackalope Society, which has its home in Sheridan, Wyoming, or visit the home of the jackalope in Douglas, Wyoming, where you can visit a large statue of one. Here's hoping that you run fast and catch at least a glimpse of a jackalope sometime in your life. listener feedback. Our feedback this month is a pair of comments from our recent episodes. From listener Gigi: "This was such a delight. I loved being able to see the tarot deck in question for this time around, and I was tickled by the illustrations throughout. I'll miss the monthly posting, but it's definitely worth it for the extra content." And from listener RetroCat: "I enjoy all the content you've created, but yes, I too love the new format. I listen during my witching hour walks with my dog. Thank you." Love both of these comments, and Gigi's obviously referring to, we do a quarterly video version of the Folk Magician's Notebook that goes out on our YouTube channel. Has several of the sections that you hear in our regular monthly episodes, but done as kind of visual pieces. So we have like an animatic folktale and things like that, which we're hoping to have another one of those coming up here in, about a month or so. Good news for Gigi and good news for everybody else. We do still do monthly audio episodes. So you do still, hopefully, if you're listening to this, you know that because you're getting a monthly audio episode. But we do monthly audio episodes with our Folk Magician's Notebook. And then every quarter, we just sort of take some pieces of different ones, put them together, and have a quarterly one that does a sort of overview of everything happening next 3 months, but also gives us time to, produce the stuff that goes into it, which is a little more in-depth and time-consuming than just the audio. So, also glad to hear people are enjoying the new format. Definitely enjoy doing it this way, getting a lot of different folklore. Feels very, feels like an anthology in some ways. Hopefully it's beneficial to some folks and people are enjoying that. So thank you for sharing some comments, putting those up on our, I think those were from our Spotify feed, but people sharing comments on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, in any place that you're getting your podcast. That's an awesome thing. Love, hearing from you. Also helps other people find these shows because the comments boost them and people can, see them. And you never know, you might be, leading somebody to, a podcast that is really helpful to them. So appreciate that a lot. So thank you again for leaving those comments. And if you have thoughts on the show or any other, feel free to leave comments on our various places where we put this podcast out, or send us an email, compassandkey@gmail.com. Or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us, and glad to hear from you. Love to share your thoughts and feedback here on the show. So if you send something in, do let us know if we can use your name or if there's a pseudonym we can use. And then maybe you'll hear an answer in a future episode. So you can find all of our episodes, including Folk Magician's Notebook episodes and all of our New World Witchery episodes, over 250 of those, available at www.newworldwitchery.com. You can go to that website and click the Find Us section, which will lead you to all of our upcoming things like classes and events, has all of our social media accounts. You can find our YouTube channel listed there. Lots and lots of stuff coming up. So you can basically keep track of us that way. Feel free to also subscribe to our newsletter if you put that in there. Truly, the newsletter only goes out when we post something on the website. So it's basically your monthly episode notice. And then occasionally there'll be an article that we publish or an event or something that we'll put like a small notice out about. But we do not spam you with stuff when we do that. It's you're most likely going to get one email a month from us. So if you feel like doing that, we have a little subscribe section on our website that on the sidebar. Just put your email address in, subscribe, and get updates from us. You feel like supporting the show, comments are great. Love that. Emails are great. Love that. If you want to throw some money our way, we love that too. You can do that at patreon.com/newworldwitchery. $1 a month, whatever you can afford, gets you all kinds of cool stuff. I think I said earlier in the episode, for our $5 a month plus patrons, we're going to have video recordings of some classes and stuff. Our $1 a month patrons get access to our Discord server, get a fairly regular newsletter coming out to them with information and stuff going on as well, and get first access to episodes and things like that. So even at the $1 a month level, you're getting something, and the sort of higher up you go, the more stuff you get. We have things like zines that come out once a year, stuff like that gets produced. So very, very happy to have folks supporting us, and happy to try and share some good stuff your way too. So that will do it for us this time around. Thank you again for joining us. Hope this was useful to you, and that you got a little folklore in your life this month. So enjoy that, and we'll be back again next month with more Folk Magician's Notebook. But until then, thanks for listening. Be well.
Thank you.